From the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week, on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, a report from the front in northern Syria, Turkey's president visits the White House, and China's repression continues. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. In spite of a ceasefire in northern Syria, the humanitarian group Free Burma Rangers continue to rescue Kurds and Christians in the region who are still being targeted. Joining Family Research Council President Tony Perkins to discuss the crisis is the founder of the Free Burma Rangers, David Eubank.
Dave, thanks so much for staying up late and joining us from Syria. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, sir. God bless you.
Well, Dave, I want you to give our listeners a read out of what's happening there on the ground as you are on the front lines of the conflict there in northeast Syria.
Well, yes, sir. The invasion started last month, unprovoked invasion, where the United States actually had formed a line with patrols on the Turk-Syrian border and told our allies and friends here, the Syrian Democratic Forces, that we would protect them. They could dismantle their defenses as they were our partners against ISIS, and they had an emergent democracy, and we wanted to defend that as part of our policy here. But there was a switch and a betrayal, a break of our promise, and we stepped out of the way fully knowing that Erdogan would attack and use the Free Syrian Army, which includes many jihadis, to launch attack into northeast Syria. Now, the Turkish-backed forces have driven in some places 30 kilometers, some places here, this is close to 27 kilometers, from the Turkish border down into an area mostly populated by Kurds and Christians, which has driven out 300,000 people since it started, killed over 1,000 people, wounded thousands more. And so it's a zone of death, of murder, of ethnic cleansing, and displacement. The people here call it a zone of genocide. And right now, the U.S. has done nothing to stop it.
Now, let's talk about this. Erdogan said he wanted this buffer zone between Turkey and Syria, primarily to go after, he said, the YPG, which was connected to what they said terrorist groups that were operating in Turkey. Of course, the People's Protection Units, the YPG, the Kurdish militia, which was aligned with the Syrian Democratic Forces, which, as you mentioned, was a part of setting up the autonomous administration in that northeast region, which we've been so supportive of because that's where we've seen true religious freedom, where you have Yazidis, Christians, Kurds, Muslims, all living peacefully together, practicing their faith openly. That is really hanging in the balance here with the outcome of this conflict. But you're saying that they are continuing, even though there's a ceasefire, the hostilities continue there as Turkish drones, planes, and then their Syrian militia alliances, the rebels, are taking people out on the ground.
Yes, sir. There hasn't been one single day of ceasefire since this invasion started. Not one, even though there was two announced, not one. I'm looking at my board right now, and just what our medics have treated and taken care of, I see 149 wounded, 83 killed. That's just what we've taken care of. The hospital that we're in partnership with, the Kurdish Red Crescent, they've got about 1,000 dead and more than that, maybe four times that many wounded. And so the fights have gone on. But the Free Syrian Army, their proxy force, again, mostly comprised of jihadis from other areas like Damascus that fled after Damascus was completely freed of jihadis. Anyways, these forces are the ground troops, a few captured Syrian tanks. But behind them is the Turkish military. I've seen their tanks, Leopard tanks, smaller tanks, armored personnel carriers, crew-served weapons, and then they have airstrikes every single day from drones. And so there was an all-out onslaught this last month that I was started about 3 kilometers from the Turkish border inside Syria giving medical relief, and we've been driven backwards, losing men every day, all the way to our outside of town of Tal Tamer, which is in the Khabur River Valley, an historic Christian area. Only 200 Christians left in this town, and they will not stay if the Turks get here. The Turks and the Free Syrian Army are about 4 to 5 kilometers outside the town. That's 2 to 3 miles. That's it. where they are now. And what's happened right now, the last few days, the advance has slowed, but the Turks will launch an armored attack. The Syrian Democratic Forces will try to counter with some anti-armor, and then drones will take those out. And not only will they the drones take out any sizable opposition force, they've also taken out six ambulances, including a strike right behind ours, which killed one of my team members, who's a medic and a videographer, last week. Just yesterday, an ambulance was taken out. So medics have been killed, and the ambulances are targeted. Just today, where we normally park our vehicles, hiding in a building, I happened to leave to go pick up my family, and a drone strike took out that building.
Now, these ambulances are marked according to international standards, so they should be off limits to drone strikes. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's a violation of international law. Well, first, you know, the biggest violation is they invaded, unprovoked invasion into Syria, attacking our allies, which you pointed out are not only our allies defeating ISIS, which is a threat to us, but also an emergent democracy where there is freedom of religion, from religion, where Christians, Yazidis, Kurds could live together. And the U.S. cannot solve these problems, but our presence gave them a chance to solve these problems, and we were partners together in it. So we needlessly threw away a wonderful partnership. We needlessly gave away the moral high ground and betrayed these people, which also weakens our allies, because our allies, how can they trust us? And our enemies then know, wow, these guys are easy to scare. And so it really is a lose all the way around, from the moral to the tactical to the strategic. And right now, I think we can regain that by, one, saying we're sorry. Second, pushing our troops back up here. And in the middle of that, you can have a no-fly zone. Because right now, like, we try to move casualties. Just that alone, you'll get killed trying to move casualties. Last night, it took us about 4 hours hiding from drones to go out in the field and drag two dead people and three wounded back. So a no-fly zone would be absolutely the very first thing that's needed. And the Kurds could probably take care of themselves if you didn't have these drone strikes every night, every day.
Dave, we're almost out of time, but one final question. What about war crimes? I mean, I heard of atrocities that are being perpetrated by the Free Syrian Army and others. What are you seeing in that regard?
Well, war crimes, first, the Free Syrian Army, when they capture people, they torture them. They beheaded Syrian army troops that came up to try to plug the gap. It's on many different videos now. About 3 weeks ago, when they captured two women fighters, they mutilated them. And then we have civilians an old couple in their 70s whipped and left on the ground, Kurds, because they didn't run away fast enough. So you're going to have the same things that ISIS did when they came to an area: beheadings, torture, rape. These are war crimes. And I think Erdogan is responsible directly for these crimes by unleashing this attack and supporting it by air, artillery, and other support. And we, as the United States, who are standing here, this is the really scary part. Morally, for my soul, for the soul of my nation, and I think even legally, we knew this attack would come and we stepped out of the way. That makes us complicit. And I guess I want to finish by saying it's not too late to change. And Mr. President, I love you. Please change this. You can do it. You have the power to do it. You have the way to do it. Step by step, by engaging with everybody, we can change this.
Dave Eubank, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for the work you're doing. I know you do it as a ministry to spread the gospel by serving those in need,
sir,
and those in danger. So thank you, Dave.
Thank you, because Jesus saved me. I want people to know that. Thank you, sir.
You can find out more about David Eubank's work when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, you can also find out how you can receive Tony's daily update. It's an email with the top stories concerning faith, family, and freedom. Again, that's tonyperkins.com.
What is the Bible's stance on religious liberty? In FRC's new publication titled Biblical Principles for Religious Liberty, Evidence from Scripture and Church History, author David Clawson addresses this question by presenting key biblical and theological arguments for why religious liberty is worth defending and encourages Christians to stand up for America's first freedom. Learn more by visiting frc.org/belief.
Well, Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Turkey's President Erdogan met with President Trump on Wednesday. But on Tuesday, Tony Perkins had a chance to talk with Texas Congressman Dan Crenshaw to discuss Erdogan's visit in light of the situation in northern Syria, as well as issues involving Erdogan's security detail during his last visit to the U.S. Here's FRC President Tony Perkins.
Dan, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me, Tony.
You're concerned about what might be happening in getting a jump on this to ensure that everybody is aware that the First Amendment is alive and well.
Yeah, I think that's right. And as you said, it's important to remind the Turkish president that while they may not respect, you know, freedom to protest or freedom to associate or freedom to organize in their country, we do respect that here, and vigorously so. And I think it's important. The reason we sent this letter to the State Department and the Metropolitan Police is to show them that there's bipartisan support from the people, from the House of Representatives, that we take our First Amendment rights seriously. We're not going to tolerate foreigners coming into this country and infringing on that right.
Now, last time, as I mentioned, 19 people were charged, 15 of which were part of Erdogan's security detail. They were ultimately indicted in connection with the clash. The charges were later dropped by the Justice Department. What prompted you to get out in front on this issue?
Well, like I said, I think it's important to get out in front of it and ensure that our law enforcement and our State Department knows that we have their back. I think that this is happened, like you said, this has happened twice before. And we don't want it to happen again. So I think the only way to ensure that is to let the law enforcement know that the people are behind them on this, and we want our First Amendment rights respected. We're not going to tolerate anything less.
Congressman Crenshaw, I know you're a decorated military veteran. You've served our country. You've served in the Middle East. I just had Dave Eubank joining me just a few moments ago from Syria, from northeast Syria, where he's actually on the front line, helping those that are being wounded in a humanitarian effort. If you were to be in the room with the president, President Trump and President Erdogan tomorrow, what questions would you press? What would you want to hear from Erdogan?
I think we'd want to know how they view the alliance in the future. I think it should be clear. It should be made clear to them that they haven't been acting as good allies, not a good NATO ally, nor a good ally in the fight against ISIS in Syria. If anything, they're making the situation worse now. And I'm not on the front lines. I can't see exactly what's going on. And obviously, your reporter is. But it's certainly not peace and prosperity. That's not what's happening. And we want to know how they envision fixing that, you know. And I think we should take a hard line with them. You know, I was supportive of sanctions against Turkey for their actions. I still am. The actions they took a week ago, they effectively gave us the message that they were going to send an invading army past our troops, whether we liked it or not. That was their message to us, and that's not how an ally acts. It's very simple. Allies act like the Kurds acted. Okay, they were our good allies. They trusted us, and we fought alongside them. The Turks have not acted in that same way, and so we want to hear how they're going to make that right. And it's not clear cut. You know, we can't undo that their invasion past their borders,
right.
But we can lay out a map ahead, and it's unclear what that might be. But that needs to be the conversation.
Well, you bring up a really good point. As a NATO ally, I mean, they have NATO's second largest army, but yet they're fighting alongside the Free Syrian Army, the Syrian National Army, whichever title you want to use, which includes ISIS members and other Islamist groups. I mean, how can a NATO ally do that?
Well, furthermore, how can a NATO ally purchase S-400s? Now there's reports of them potentially buying the Russian fifth-generation fighter. NATO is built as a defense for Western civilization against, it was originally against the Soviets and now still against a belligerent Russia. So you really have to question how a NATO ally can do those things either, let alone comfortably operate alongside Islamic terrorists. So, yeah, there's a lot of questions we have for Turkey. And, you know, they became a NATO ally when they were a much more secular government. They've moved in a much more radical direction ever since. They've become much more authoritarian. They regularly jail journalists. After the coup, they immediately had 80,000 people on a list from whom they would actually prosecute and jail without due process, many of which are still imprisoned. So again, it's difficult to see how they are an actual ally and what values we share. And you know, if there's one thing I want to hear from them, I want to hear what values we still share and how they're going to live up to those values.
Is it, I mean, obviously the NATO alliance does not allow for a country to be kicked out. They have to voluntarily leave. But is it time to reevaluate that alliance?
Well, I think we're definitely reevaluating it. As you said, though, it's not clear exactly how you manifest that reevaluation in reality and just based on the laws governing the NATO alliance.
Yeah, it calls the whole situation of NATO into question. Congressman Crenshaw, thanks so much for joining us. Thank you for your service to our country, and great to have you on the program today.
Hey, great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
You can find out more about Dan Crenshaw when you visit tonyperkins.com. We'll be back with more of the weekend edition of Washington Watch right after this.
Abortion is one of the most combative moral and political questions in America today, even among Christians. There's been a renewed effort in theological liberal Christian circles to argue that the Bible does not oppose abortion. In FRC's new publication titled Biblical Principles for Pro-Life Engagement, Personhood, Scripture, and Church History, author David Clausen examines relevant passages in the Bible that inform how a Christian should think about abortion. Learn more by visiting frc.org/unborn.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. There's been a lot of focus on China recently, concerns about religious minorities, their control of technology, and how they're treating the people of Hong Kong. Joining Tony Perkins to talk about it is Senator Josh Hawley of Missouri.
Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me.
Well, Senator, CNN reports that the threat of violence hung over Hong Kong Thursday evening as thousands of student protesters prepared to face off once again with riot police amid a continued occupation of several of the city's most prestigious universities. As I mentioned, you visited Hong Kong recently. What is it that continues to motivate these student protesters that are advocating for democracy?
It's their fear, Tony, and their realization that Beijing wants to take it all away. You know, Beijing promised the people of Hong Kong when they took back over the city that they would protect the basic liberties of the Hong Kong residents, their right to worship, their right to speak, their right to assemble, free press. And now they're trying to take those things away. And the people of Hong Kong realize that if Beijing succeeds, they'll never get their rights back. And so they're standing up.
It appears that it's becoming more violent. How long before we see a crackdown by the Chinese government?
Well, it is getting more violent, and that's because of Beijing. This escalation now where the Hong Kong police force using riot gear, using tear gas, using weapons, actually invading the campuses, as you referred to. And, you know, these students they're not armed. I mean, they don't have any way to defend themselves other than to form human chains, human shields, which is what they're doing. And extraordinary acts of courage on the parts of the students. Over the weekend, this past weekend, two protesters were shot by police with live rounds. Again, these are people who are unarmed. So we are seeing a deadly escalation in violence, Tony. And I think that the only thing that's holding Beijing back at this point is the pressure of the United States and the pressure of other free countries who are making it clear that we are watching and there will be repercussions. And that's why it is vital that the Senate pass the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act. And I think it's going to be passed, if not tomorrow, then the first of next week.
I want to get to that measure, but I want to ask you a question. Given the preoccupation in Washington, D.C., especially driven by the House with the, you know, now impeachment investigation, my concern is, Senator, that issues like Hong Kong and China, knowing that we're somewhat distracted, that they could see that as an open door.
Well, I think that there's no doubt that that's a threat, and it's just true in general, Tony, that nothing is, that Washington is hugely distracted, and that nothing much is getting done here because of this impeachment circus. And that's bad on the border, on our southern border, as drugs continue to pour across the border and pour into my home state of Missouri. It's bad internationally, and of course it's bad for all the folks who are waiting for relief from, say, skyrocketing prescription drug prices, who can't get this Congress to do anything. So there's a lot to be worried about with the impeachment circus, but we've got to keep, I'll just say this, speaking just for myself, I'm going to keep my eye on the ball. I'm going to continue to keep up my pressure on the government in Beijing, keep doing my part to raise awareness about this issue and to say that it is absolutely unacceptable that Beijing strip the rights and liberties of the people of Hong Kong, and there will be a response from this government in the form of sanctions if that happens.
I think that's extremely important. My concern all along with the first the Russia, now the impeachment investigation, is that this becomes a distraction internationally, and there's so much volatility around the globe. You just pick a, you can spin the globe, stick your finger, and you're going to find a hot spot most likely. Let's talk about the measure you're advocating to address the situation in Hong Kong with the potential of sanctions.
This is the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act, which I'm proud to be a co-sponsor on, that's introduced to the Senate, and I'm happy to say that it is going through what's known as the fast-track process here in the Senate, and so it should be voted on very, very soon, as early potentially as tomorrow, but probably Monday. And this is great news. The truth is we've had to wait too long, Tony, to bring this to the floor. This really should have happened weeks and weeks ago, but we finally got it there. Senator Rubio deserves a lot of credit for the work he's done on this. But basically what it does is it gives our government the ability to impose sanctions on the Hong Kong government, on the Beijing-backed officials. It also gives our government the power to reassess our trade status with Hong Kong if Beijing decides to try and do something truly foolish, like overrun the city. So it gives their new tools that get put on the table, the new possibility of sanction and pressure points that we could use with Beijing, and I just think that's critical. Beijing only understands pressure. They're their bully, so they only understand if you stand up to them. You can't be passive. And this is a measure that moves in that direction.
I want to go a little broader, Senator, because you gave a speech on Tuesday at the Center for New American Security entitled Rethinking America's Foreign Policy. And you, looking at the Far East, looking at what is happening with Hong Kong and China, you're seeing some warning signs there, and you're sounding the alarm.
Well, I think it's time, Tony, that we refocus what it is we're trying to do abroad, and that begins with these forever wars in the Middle East that have gone on with no clear purpose, where we have not been clear about what it is we're trying to do. American servicemen and women have lost their lives, who spent inordinate sums of money, and we don't have a lot to show for it. And it's time that we ended those. It's time that we got refocused in the Middle East on counterterrorism, which is our most pressing threat, and of course defending our ally Israel. And then in the Asia Pacific, where China is trying to project its power across the region and is trying to threaten us, threaten our economic security. They're trying to take our jobs away, steal our property, and they want ultimately to shut us out of the whole Asia region, the Asia Pacific region, and ultimately the world. And this is a rising threat, the threat of China, and we've got to get ready to stand up to them.
Well, you brought forth some of the issues with China last week when the FBI director, Christopher Wray came before the committee talking about the storage of data in China and how that is jeopardizing Americans.
You know, China is increasingly using access to our market, gaining access to our market and using it for their own purposes. And this company, TikTok, is a great example. TikTok is an app, I bet many, many listeners have it on their phone or their kids do. It's a fun app about making little music videos. Nobody knows that actually or realizes, because they've been dishonest, TikTok has, that TikTok is actually owned by a Chinese company with ties to Beijing. And all of the information on your phone, your phone book, your text messages potentially, what you look at the web, other apps that you use, TikTok scoops up all of that information, and Beijing has access to it, the Chinese Communist Party has access under Chinese law to this information. This is a huge privacy threat for every individual American who uses this, and it's really a national security threat when you think about it in the aggregate. So we're going to have to open our eyes to what China is doing, trying to systematically exploit us, exploit our people, exploit our universities. We saw with the NBA, they want to take away our free speech in our own country and try to get our own companies to self-censor. And we've got to stand up to this and say no.
Especially when you see the long list of human rights abuses from China, from the Chinese government. And I tell you, it baffles me, Senator, that you have the NBA. You mentioned the NBA, but there's hundreds of American companies that are doing business and profiting from their relationship with China and in China and their manufacturing, knowing full well that China has, the Uyghurs. Let's take the Uyghurs, for example, that are interned in these internment camps, nearly 1 million to 2 million, according to some estimates. I quite frankly, I think it's time that we see some self-governance, policing of themselves from the business community to say, you know what, we're not going to tolerate that type of stuff.
It's absolutely right. It's time for these corporations, these big multinationals that do business in China and that frankly have been happy to ship our jobs overseas to China in order to make a quick buck. It's time for them now to stand up to the communist government there and say, we're not just going to become part of your propaganda arm. I mean, we're not going to just rehearse the party line. And the NBA is a good example of being part of the propaganda arm. And here you have Beijing demanding that the NBA fire a general manager of one of the teams when he had the temerity to so much as mention potential support for the democracy protesters in Hong Kong. I mean, give me a break. If there's anything we agree on as Americans, it's those basic liberties, free speech, free worship, freedom of conscience and press. And I think it's not too much to ask that these corporations that are based in this country actually stand up for those rights.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. Senator, thanks for staying focused on some of these pressing issues that, if we don't watch, could be a threat to America's future. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.